AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Vanity Fair.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
I am delighted and proud to introduce him as Academy Award winner.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
The winner, it's a tie.
And any little girl who's practicing their speech on the telly, you never know.
Mom, I just want an Oscar.
I am Katie Rich. I'm here with Richard Lawson.
Hello.
With David Canfield.
Hi.
And with Kara Warner.
Hello.
Before we get started, make sure you listen to the end of this week's episode. We'll have some news to share about the future of this show. But for now, last week, we kind of turned the page over to a new season of Oscars. But let's be real. Many of these titles are still a ways away. And Emmy season actually is upon us. There's a lot of new shows premiering in the coming months. And a lot of shows that we have already seen are probably going to be cleaning up Emmys in a few months. I don't know if you guys knew this, but we just had an Emmys and we're about to have another one. Have we really wrapped our heads around what that is going to do to all of our brains?
I don't think
so. I think David and I got an Emmys email in January.
Mm-hmm. About the Emmys that were happening or the next Emmys?
No,
the next Emmys.
You shouldn't be allowed to do that. It did cause us a real SEO minefield of figuring out what are the 2024 Emmys. And I guess we're just going to do them all over again.
Yeah. Yep.
The end result will probably be everyone forgetting that the first 2024 Emmys ever actually happened, which I guess can maybe lead us into our first category I want to talk about in Best Comedy. Maybe it will work to the Bears' advantage that we will all forget that they have already won a whole bunch of Emmys and they can go back and win a whole bunch of other ones for their second season, which I refer to as the Jamie Lee Curtis season. That seems like it's as useful a way as any to define it. It's bizarre that the Bears' second season is only going to win Emmys, 6 months from now? But that's pretty much exactly what we all think is going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Yep. I would say there's absolutely no way that won't happen. I'm willing to go on the record this early and say, unless, like, you know, they have the added benefit of season three airing in June, meaning that while voting is happening on season two, public attention will be back on the show for season three. And that's also the combination that worked very well for it last cycle with seasons one and two. And it's, as we're going to talk about, it's a bit lighter, a lot of these races, just because of the strikes, I think, and things getting shifted around, and also general contractions and content. That seems to be the first season that we're feeling that. So when you have a show like The Bear, still so strong, I think it's like an overwhelming front runner.
There's no chance it would move to drama, right? They're going to stay in comedy.
Yeah.
Much to the chagrin of every single publicist, right? Who does not work at Disney. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, they have the category so thoroughly, not entirely to themselves. There's other good shows out there, which we can talk about. But it's such a dominant force that nobody is really sick of rewarding at this point. And I think especially because you get some of those, I guess Jamie Lee Curtis will probably be, will she be a guest actress or supporting actress? Not to get really micro right away. But yeah, there's other new people who weren't in the first season. There's new episodes that people love. You know, there just aren't that many phenomenons on the Bears level right now.
Yeah, I'm sure they're submitting seven fishes, six fishes, and that is decidedly not funny.
No.
And
no.
Long. It's over an hour.
Yeah. The most stressful episode of television of the past year. I have a hard time thinking of what could match it. Richard, I feel like when we talk about The Bear dominating, and really any domination at Emmys, there's always shows that just kind of get suffer as a result that are perfectly good. Are there any of those like that in comedy for you that just aren't going to get what they deserve?
Hmm.
I mean, I'm curious. I don't know if it's necessarily deserving, but I'm curious if Curb Your Enthusiasm having a final season could be something of an upset there, even though that season has not been that well received, as far as I'm aware. But I don't watch a lot of TV comedy anymore because they just don't really make them. I mean, The Bear is not a comedy, nor I would argue is it a good show. But sorry.
Wow.
But I, you know, I'm looking down at like Gold Derby's list, and I guess maybe 12 down on their odds. Like, I think Girls 5 Eva is pretty funny. You know, like maybe I'm just a sucker for that sort of Tina Fey patter. But yeah, I think that the muddling of comedy and drama for me has like basically ensured that I don't watch a ton of TV comedy, even though I know there is good stuff out there. What I've seen of What We Do in the Shadows, which Gold Derby has ranked sixth right now, is pretty funny. But The Bear, I was being a little flippant about it not being a good show. I just don't think it's doing what it's sort of advertised as doing. And part of that is being represented as a comedy.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one. I tend to agree with Richard, not about The Bear. I am a big fan of The Bear, but like I do think that you have a case where even shows like Reservation Dogs, which I love, and is like in that kind of Atlanta surrealist vein of half hour comedy. There's some tradition of that in this category, that they haven't really had a chance. And you've had a lot of shows over the years, like The Bear, just sort of take up all the oxygen too, or like a Ted Lasso just before it. I would like to see, because it is a lighter year, some variety, and maybe not just, you know, checking off the Curb Your Enthusiasms. I will have to see what happens there, though, because, again, habits die very, very hard with these voters.
The show that I always think of that just keeps getting overshadowed is Only Murders in the Building, which I think is funny. Like, obviously, it's got dramatic elements to it. It's so well made. I think it's really well liked. But it has, I'm looking at the numbers, I think it's been nominated for 7 major Primetime Emmys and won none of them. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's lost all of them to The Bear specifically, but, you know, that's kind
or
of the
Ted
shadow.
Lasso.
Or Ted Lasso. Yeah, there's always some kind
of shadow. I think
it's
one or the other.
And it just feels impossible for a show when it's, I guess its third season would be eligible this year to pick up that kind of momentum. If it's still at the Emmys, even though they're not as ingrained in patterns as they were in the 90s, say, it just still is such an uphill battle.
Yeah. Only Murders, I feel like if it was on 10 years ago, maybe a little longer than that, like it would be cleaning up, you know?
Like an Orange is the New Black or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, Only Murders is not like laugh out loud funny all the time, but like it's amusing and it has big celebrities in it and it's kind of cozy and it's, you know, Upper West Side New Yorkiness. And I think there's something very appealing about the show and they get big guest stars. And I just think that it would have had more of a profile if a sort of television understanding of comedy hadn't shifted. I mean, you look at something like Hacks, which is about comedians and is funny, but it really more and more in the second season was leaning more toward like not outright drama, but closer to that than, you know, the sort of joke a minute, joke every 30 seconds kind of pattern of that we're used to.
Yep. That's a great example. Hacks is coming back after a year off. So I think actress will be a little bit interesting. You know, Jean Smart is undefeated there, but Iowa Debris is going lead this season and will be obviously a force for The Bear.
As she should.
Yes. It was weird because the Emmys delayed, she was already competing for lead for season 2 of The Bear at the Globes and Critics' Choice Awards, while still being in supporting for season 1 of The Bear for the Emmys, which took place after those shows.
Yep.
Very strange time. This spring, we've had a couple big, like, campaign rollouts. Apple has Palm Royale, which I think on paper looked like a really obvious contender. I don't think it's going to turn out that way for them. I think it's going to be a bit of a climb. The critical reception's been pretty mixed, and despite the cast of Kristen Wiig and Allison Janney, and I think Leslie Bibb is wonderful in it, it actually leans, again, more towards drama, especially in its back half. The episodes are quite long. It's pretty drawn out. So I don't know how much traction it will find here, even with a big campaign. And then maybe on the more positive side, Netflix has The Gentlemen, which is going comedy.
Yeah.
It's a huge hit. Theo James is very dryly funny in it, and he's kind of coming off of that White Lotus nomination. Given how few like hits we're talking about here, like big hits, I think that one could pop in quite a few places.
What about, I mean, my favorite, honestly, Abbott Elementary, even though they've, even though it's already, you know, won, people do still say
it has not won this category.
Oh, I thought it had.
Just it won. Quinta Brunson won for writing, and Shirley Ralph won at that same Emmys.
And then Quinta won lead actress last year.
Right.
Because
Io was in supporting. Yes. But no, you're right. Like, it feels like it's been so celebrated for bringing back the concept of a network comedy, and it has an Emmy pedigree. But yeah, it's still facing the bear, honestly.
Right. It's not cool. I think that's part of the problem, you know, and the bear sort of scratches the itch that began with Louis all those years ago. I mean, that's really the patient zero of the kind
they
of
they don't like it when you remind them of that, Richard. Yeah.
Sorry, but like that's what started this sort of erosion of your traditional sick, you know, half hour comedy. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm just kind of indulging myself by looking at the Gold Derby, like, odds rankings. Number 19, Heartstopper. Yes, that hilarious show. Wow. What are we doing? Like, it's
but
just
it's like,
so...
it's like a Shakespearean comedy, right? Where, like, they get together in the end. I haven't watched Heartstopper.
Yeah, but... sure. I mean, I guess so. Righteous Gemstones, that's a funny show that's trying to be a comedy, but that would never get in there. But, yeah, it's just a very weird landscape. And, I don't see the bear losing much of anything, although, as David mentioned, actress is a bit more challenging this year than it has been, I guess, this year.
I do really want to hold out hope for Girls 5 Eva, which you mentioned, Richard, as being kind of like further down the rankings on Gold Derby, but it's on Netflix now. It got a push. They're out there doing press for it. It's so incredibly funny. You know, it can live on in GIFs, if nothing else, and hopefully will draw people into it. And we all know that there are shows that have gotten second acts on Netflix and have suddenly found their audience. Mm-hmm. So I'm a huge partisan for that show, so I don't know how realistic it is, but I would love to see it get somewhere here.
I also have to say, a show like The Bear or Hacks or even Only Murders or whatever, like, what clips get passed around online, thus ensuring the enduring legacy of the show? It's like jokes from Abbott. It's jokes from shows like Girls 5 Eva or 30 Rock. It's like, feels like almost as popular, if not more, as it was now as it was then. And
we had a leap day this year. It was a really great day for 30 Rock.
right. And I think that like encouraging a show like Girls 5 Eva, which like is just, yes, it is clearly very inspired by a particular brand of comedy, which is Tina Fey's. It is at least trying to, I mean, there is a joke probably every other sentence, if not every sentence in that show. And I think in a way those are more enduring, you know, and that's an interesting way to look at like Curb Your Enthusiasm having its last season. Like that show is very funny and often clipped and memeable and all that. Not that that is the end goal of creating a TV show, but if we're thinking about legacy, I just don't see people passing around clips of The Bear, you know, in 10, 20 years.
They're just therapists passing around clips from the Seven Fishes episode. Be like, what about this resonates with you and your relationship with your family?
Exactly.
But they are passed around like drama clips. I mean, that's how the show is talked about.
Right. Yeah.
You know, a Jeremy Allen White monologue or the Seven Fishes stuff. Like, that's what it is. It's you're completely right. I mean, I was on a plane recently and I watched a bunch of 30 Rock and I thought to myself, like, what happened? What are we doing? Where is something like this? Because I'm a fan of Girls 5 Eva, but you know, you get six episodes of that after several years, and I just don't know if that's going to be enough to, like, galvanize voters who have ignored it previously. And 30 Rock would get 22 a year. And these network comedies, I mean, strike interruptions aside, do still get more room. And that's really important for comedy, and that doesn't exist for a lot of shows anymore.
I think that we talk a lot about on this podcast about category fraud. Like, is that really a supporting performance? Is that really lead performance? That doesn't really bother me. It's just kind of an interesting thing to talk about sometimes. This is the kind of category fraud that increasingly does bother me. Like, if we're going to have comedy categories, can they please, for the love of God, be comedies? If it's going to be a limited series, can we just not announce a second season the day after the Emmy nominations? Like, you know, like, this is cheating. And I think it's created this thing where, like, there's a vacuum of comedy because, like, I guess people, the math is that, like, oh, people are getting stuff from TikTok and Reels and all that. That's where they're getting, like, jokes. But I don't know. I think that if there was a more, like, rigid way to sort of define a comedy, it has to be this long. Maybe it's a subjective thing, but the tone has to be this a certain way. I think we would get more of them. And a show like The Bear would flourish in drama. It has a lot of competition. It would have a lot of competition over there. But it's probably the most, like, critically beloved show on TV right now. So I think it could hold its own in the genre that it should be in.
Much of Hollywood is still defined by who can win awards and where. So, yes, it would change.
Can I zero in on one category here as I, again, scroll through Gold Derby? Thank you to our friends at Gold Derby. is Meryl Streep going to run away with an Emmy for Only Murders in supporting actress?
I mean, it kind of seems like that, doesn't it? I mean,
she's got to beat Cheryl Lee Ralph, which is no small task, even for Meryl Streep.
She wasn't even nominated, I believe, or she didn't win for Big Little Lies. She may not have been nominated.
David,
she definitely didn't win.
Was she good on Big Little Lies? Ask yourself this question.
Well, that season never aired, though. So we don't.
It's true. When Nicole Kidman brings up season 3 of Big Little Lies, she's taking a big old leap. I'm not going to comment on that, but I do think that the Emmys don't necessarily care about big beloved movie stars more than their favorite shows. And that is something they've shown quite often. That said, I think she'll be nominated, and I don't think that category is particularly deep. Like, The Bear has a lot of great performances. I love Liza Colanzeas on that show. I don't think that those are, you know, runaway front runners to win an Emmy necessarily. So she does have a clear lane there.
In a complete vacuum, it is sort of insane to be like, oh, yeah. And then later in her career, Meryl Streep won a supporting Emmy for the third season of a streaming comedy.
Narrowly beating out Abby Elliott.
Like, if you had said that to me 15 years ago, I would have screamed and run into the mountains. I don't know. I'm like, no, it can't happen.
I would like to shout out Janelle James as if having an amazing season on Abbott Elementary.
Yeah,
and she's overdue.
Yeah, and her character had like a big like transformation, right? There's a big arc for her character, I'm told. I haven't seen much of the new season, but that could be interesting because, she's kind of unfortunately fallen into second place behind the force that is Cheryl Lee Ralph. So,
sure. Janelle James was nominated previously, but Lisa Ann Walter, I don't think, has been nominated for Abbott. And so you wonder if like this category is looking a little thinner and maybe three of them managed to sneak in there.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, Walter obviously won an Oscar for Parent Trap, so she's fine awards-wise, but...
Yeah. And it's also funny seeing Hannah Einbinder in there as the undisputed co-lead of Hacks that she keeps just winding up in this category. Again, category fraud. We just keep getting mad about it. To go into supporting actor for comedy as well, like speaking of three nominees for Abbott, like it feels very possible that you get three nominees here for The Bear. And Eben Musbachrach, who is the reigning champion in this category. I guess Oliver Platt is now not a guest star, but a regular.
Because he was in too many episodes.
Yes. And then Maddie Matheson or Lionel Boyce. Like that's a really deep bench from that one show. And I wonder what they would do with that.
Interesting. I feel like Lionel Boyce, because he has that
one episode.
Great showcase episode, is probably a little bit more likely than Maddie Matheson. But could be both of them. Could be all four. I don't know.
Yeah. Them and then Tyler James Williams from Abbott just kind of holding down his side of things.
I'm Chris Murphy.
I'm Richard Lawson.
And I'm Hilary Busis. We are from Vanity Fair's Still Watching podcast. Next up, we're watching the new HBO show, The Regime.
Madam Chancellor. Let's keep the gloves on.
This is not a confrontation. We're just saying what's true.
Academy Award winner Kate Winslet is our chancellor as she leads a faux European autocracy in turmoil.
We'll be watching week by week as The Regime unravels.
And we'll be talking to the stars along the way.
New episodes of Still Watching will drop every Sunday after The Regime airs.
This message comes from Apple Card. Earn up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase, every day. Then, grow it at 4.50% annual percentage yield when you open a savings account with Apple Card. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card subject to credit approval. Savings available to Apple Card owners subject to eligibility. Savings accounts provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Terms apply.
So let's move on to the drama categories, where I do think there is an interesting shakeup ahead. You don't have Succession, which has been the bear of drama. I guess that is kind of true in many ways. And I don't think there's a really obvious successor to Succession, even with The Crown sitting here as a... Is it when one time previously in the drama series? David, I feel like you know these things off the top of your head. And then a lot of other things that kind of might want to jump up in place. looking at our friends at Gold Derby, I'm seeing some inconsistency about whether Mr. and Mrs. Smith will be a drama or a comedy.
It's a drama.
It's a drama. Okay, because it does seem like it would be much more competitive. Maybe not for an overall win, but maybe. It seems very popular.
They're also very high Amazon on Fallout, which I know Kara can talk more about.
Yeah, I have been very lucky to do a couple Q&A preview screening events with Amazon. So I have been one of the few to see some of Fallout. I'm very into it, I think. I did not play the game that it's based on, but it is a really interesting, entertaining, bizarre. It's a wild show, and I'm very excited for people to see it.
This is actually, I think, a really exciting race if we choose to view it that way. Of the 8 nominees last year for drama series, the only one that's back, as Katie said, is The Crown. So there's a ton of room to play. And then in addition to all those new shows like Fallout or Mr. and Mrs. Smith or others we'll talk about, there is an expectation that shows that I think started out like as jokes, kind of, including The Morning Show and The Gilded Age, are now like heavyweights and will almost certainly be nominated across the board. So that's a fun development for me personally.
I really do love The Gilded Age's journey from getting 50 members of its cast nominated for SAG Awards to being an Emmy heavyweight. Like, they cannot be stopped.
They cannot be.
It's funny that the Emmys were like so quick to embrace Downton Abbey and like maybe we'll like give The Gilded Age something in its second season. And it's like, it's just because they have American accents. It sounded so much more sophisticated when they were British, didn't it? You know, and that's I just think that that's really amusing. But The Gilded Age really like took off this fall, last fall, which was kind of fun. So I would like to see it nominated here, if only to get all of them at the show. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I think it's going to happen. I think you're going to have Carrie Coon and Christine Baranski side by side with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. So,
what about our beloved Elsbeth? We haven't even talked about her.
Is that a drama?
Yeah, yes. What's that going to compete? Yeah.
Well, actually, that's the funny thing about Elsbeth is that, to me, from what I saw, just the pilot, which is this Good Wife spinoff starring Carrie Preston, who won an Emmy for that role as a guest star on The Good Wife. This is now a lead on a new CBS series. It felt like a comedy to me.
Right.
But it's an hour-long procedural format, so I think they're going drama. I think she can be nominated. And it was pretty well reviewed, at least the pilot, so I think they're pretty optimistic over there. But
People love her and that character, I think. I'm hopeful as well.
That feels very Emmys-friendly, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it is on a network, but like, it's quirky network. It's like not, it's a procedural, but it's not, you know, the 90th season of Law and Order.
I was thinking Olivia Benson, maybe as a longtime SVU fan. I mean, if the drama, I guess you said drama for actress is crowded, but they could always, NBC definitely always campaigns Mariska.
They do. And I think she's having her 25th anniversary on the show this year, which is wild. Speaking of shows that have been around a while that might get their Emmy glow up, Slow Horses feels like it's really well positioned to. I don't think it's been nominated in drama series before.
Not at all. Yeah, not for anything.
But like, people talk about this show. It's like real dad TV stuff. But hey, there's a lot of dads in the Emmys in the Emmy voting body.
I just finished it. I enjoy it a lot.
Kara, is there anyone, because I haven't seen the third season yet, but I know like Kristen Scott Thomas and Sofia Canedo are supposed to be pretty fun in the third season, if there's anyone who you think is a good breakout.
Yeah, on the actress side, they definitely are. I mean, it's just so fun to see those two actresses as well that are prestige thespians in their own right, kind of having fun in this. It's a serious drama, but there's some fun. You know, obviously it's for entertainment purposes, but I think Gary Oldman is probably an easy nominee. Jack Lowden, I think people really like. I really love him, but I'm sure people love that Gary Oldman is playing this like greasy, dirty, legitimately smelly like retired detective. Like, it's part of his character that he just everyone is always commenting on how he doesn't shower. People really do love it. I think those four, for sure. I mean, depending, Sophie, I don't know if she'd be a guest. She might be like a guest from the season, depending on how they campaign. Kristen is a regular, but I think Sophie's a guest.
If we want to take some precursor seriously, it did get a BAFTA TV nomination this year as opposed to its previous season. And Jack Lowden was nominated as well. So that indicates some level of increased attention, I think.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see like how Apple prioritizes its dramas. They have a lot. I mentioned The Morning Show, mentioned Slow Horses, and then they have this show, Sugar, which is embargoed, but with Colin Farrell, Amy Ryan, Kirby, really stat cast, James Cromwell, that's described as a noir sci-fi, I think is in the description, mystery. So that will be interesting. And then you also have Hijack, which was a modest hit for them with a kind of a blockbuster star turn from Idris Elba, which had a lot of visibility at minimum. So I don't really know how that will go with all those elements swirling.
They also have the New Look, right? Which I don't think has gone over super well, but you know, many things could shift over the months between now and nominations, right?
Yeah, I think that one might be a little tricky just because it's airing right now and it's been so quiet. I'm not sure. The creator of that, Todd A. Kessler, did Bloodline and Damages before, both of which won acting Emmys. So I wouldn't count out Ben Mendelsohn or Juliette Binoche. But I would say both of those shows at least premiered with a lot more buzz than this one did.
Yeah. I mean, the eternal question, right? Like, I don't know if this TV this spring is as crowded as some we've seen in the past, but how to tell if people are paying attention to something remains really hard. It's really hard to gauge.
Mm-hmm. What about The Curse?
Yeah, I was going to ask about the curse.
The Curse. I mean, Emma Stone is so good on that show. I mean, I think that I love her in Poor Things, but I think in some ways The Curse was her performance of 2023. I don't love how that show, or I don't know. I guess it's the first season. Who knows of that show ends, but her work remains consistent throughout. It would be really funny if it was Imelda Staunton, Emma Stone, Juliette Binoche, let's say Reese Witherspoon and Carrie Coon, and be like, what Oscar year was that? Like, it doesn't feel that TV-ish. But I think I wonder about The Curse. It's weird. It has a sensibility that it does not seem totally Television Academy friendly. Like, I think maybe sometimes they'll only go so far with weirdness. I think they're less used to weirdness than certain movie Academy voters are. So I don't know. If the Movie Academy voters can't embrace the Safdie aesthetic, can the Television Academy?
Yeah.
I mean, Emma Stone winning an Emmy for The Curse, you know, however many months after winning an Oscar feels really plausible to me. The Morning Show keeps hanging in there. Like, but Imelda Staunton winning for The Crown, like, I don't know if I see that.
Feels weird. Yeah.
So then, like, Carrie Coon, like, we just said the Gilded Age is really picking up, but... You know, Oscar winners still have some sway when it comes to Emmys. Like Kate Winslet just a couple years ago with Mare of Easttown was completely unbeatable. So I wonder.
I think that's what's like really striking about a lot of these races is I have no idea what is winning. I mean, not a clue. In drama series alone, all the options we've talked about, in addition to like Netflix has Three Body Problem, which they're pushing really hard from the Game of Thrones creators. Disney Plus is going to try to get Loki in there after it didn't do as well as it hoped the first time around. Like, there's a lot of possibilities, but nothing feels close to a front runner except, I guess, The Crown. But I don't know that the final season was particularly well received.
Yeah.
I kind of think, I mean, I'm looking also now that we've been talking about Gold Derby, I'm also scrolling. I loved the latest season of Fargo, and I think that there's some heavy hitters.
Save
in
it for
cast.
Limited. You got to save it for limited.
Limited, pardon.
Knowing what's a limited series, again, remains very
difficult.
That
should not be limited. It's anthology, right?
To close out drama, just looking at the supporting categories, it does feel like it's kind of The Morning Show versus The Crown question mark. Like, Elizabeth Debicki winning an Emmy again for The Crown would be kind of strange given the way that the back half of The Crown went. But I don't really know who to put in there instead. I think it's just echoing what David said about it feeling very uncertain who might emerge here.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a place where I really love a lot of the supporting performances on The Morning Show, and each of them, Greta Lee obviously just had a big moment with Past Lives. She had a big season. Karen Pittman, from my observation, has been kind of the campaign focus so far for Apple, and she had a great season. Nicole Beharie has this really powerful monologue. So one of those could pop. And I think that would be a fitting embrace of that show, assuming Aniston and Witherspoon don't win. But yeah, I don't know.
Way down the list, I saw on supporting actress contenders, Nicole Kidman for that show, Special Ops Lioness, which is a Taylor Sheridan show.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Which, you know, whatever. About that show.
But that reminded me that I watched that whole season. And
and you had not thought about it since.
Zoe Saldana is so good on that show. Oh. She gives a genuinely like incredible performance. There's one scene in a hospital where it has nothing to do with spy stuff. It's about family stuff. And she is legitimately, it's like one of the scenes, the great scenes I saw last year. So I would love it will never happen because it's called Special Ops Lioness and it's not, you know, it's not an awardsy, but like, and Kidman is really good too, as this kind of icy CIA person. So if anything, I don't know, people should check out that show for those two good performances, but no, they will not get nominated.
Yeah. But also Kidman's going to campaign expats, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Oh my God. Again, yeah. This gets limited. I just want to say one more thing before we jump off of drama. I always thought Khalid Abdallah as Dodi Al-Fayed was really good on The Crown. And it would be nice to see him get in there and get nominated for it. It feels like it's one of the more like interesting performances we saw as that show kind of came to an end.
He's really good. And Salim Daw, who plays Mohammed Al-Fayed, Mohammed Fayed, he's incredible.
He's amazing.
Yeah. And they really like give him a big moment in the last season. And he's just been around forever. And I don't know, that would be good. But like, again, like you said, David, I don't know how Crown conscious anyone is at this moment.
Well, we keep trying to jump over to limited series. So let's go ahead and do it. Again, knowing what actually qualifies in here is a continuing journey. But Kara, earlier when we were talking about drama, you wanted to bring up Fargo. So sing the praises of Fargo.
Yeah. I loved this season. Juno Temple, John Hamm. There's a lot of great, great character actors in this season, but I really loved it. And I thought people were very high on it, at least when it was broadcast. But that also, you know, it was in the midst of coming out of the strike and things like that. I don't know if anyone else has seen it.
I also was a big fan.
Yeah.
Particularly of Juno Temple, who I've always liked. I thought that the way that she was handled on Ted Lasso became terrible. But seeing her just run with a really complicated and fun lead character here was just thrilling to watch. So I hope she gets traction.
Yeah, the whole season revolves around her and in a really interesting way. And she's really good at it. And John Hamm is a great foil for that, kind of doing a parody of, I don't know, a lot of horrible men you see online and in politics. It's just a good return to form season. But whether the Academy kind of returns to that show in the way that some viewers did, I don't know. But I think, you know, not to be too negative as I have been, I think, this whole episode, like, I think that this somewhat, I mean, True Detective was a big hit, but I think that maybe by the end, some opinion of it had soured. I wonder if that affects Jodie Foster, which would bump Juno Temple.
But then Nick Pizzolatto made everybody want to be on its side again.
Well, that's true.
So he helped the Emmy campaign there.
Yeah, that's true. And like HBO, you know, hired Issa Lopez again. I also think kind of ditto, I don't know what kind of noise the regime is making. And so is Kate Winslet.
Yeah.
How much of a player is she? So I don't know. I mean, I think that Juno Temple, of all of those shows that I've watched, like Juno Temple's performance is the most memorable and the most interesting, even though I love Foster and, you know, Winslet is typically great.
I can give my hot take prediction for Limited right now, if we're ready for it. I think Shogun is going to run the table. And I think Anna Sawai could even be a lot of those actresses in lead actress.
Been very well received, that show.
It's excellent. And I think that the big question was whether it would kind of cross over from that genre, historical, epic audience to something a little bit more prestige-y, Emmy-friendly. And it seems to have from my vantage point. And it has a huge campaign behind it. And there's also just something about the way that it's been marketed and structured that is really smart, you know, emphasizing the fact that this is majority not in English, and it has so carefully avoided a lot of the problematic traps it could have fallen into, and just a really respectful and invigorating retelling of that novel. I'm really impressed with it, and I think that that's definitely the case for a lot of people.
I also don't think that we should count out. Speaking of FX stuff, Capote vs. Swans.
Yeah, I wonder what to make of that.
I mean, I think it got a lot of good reviews. People who've watched it liked it. But the thing is, like, how many people is that? You know, my echo chamber might be such engineered to favor people who would watch Capote versus Swans. But even if that show is not a contender, like, for the big prize, like, I do think that Tom Holland, or certainly Naomi Watts, is really good. And then you have, you know, a slew of other supporting swans. Actors, you know, other swans. Yes. Chloe Sevigny, Diane Lane. Molly Ringwald, Calista Flockhart, Demi Moore. I think that probably of those, Chloe Sevigny would be the best choice. But Naomi Watts, I guess they want to run and lead, which makes sense. And she is really good in it. But I don't know, maybe there's just too much competition in that particular category. But you're right, David. I mean, Shogun is the one probably that feels like it has the most momentum right now.
It feels like Shogun's the only one that people haven't kind of worn out on. Like, even with Feud, I feel like, you know, I watched half of it and then I got some word that, like, it maybe didn't improve past what I had watched. I feel like The Regime has had some question marks around it. Masters of the Air, like, came and went in a very strange way for a project that's splashy. And, like, whereas Shogun, like, I just kind of keep hearing, and similar to Fargo, I guess, you keep hearing more and more people talk about how good it is. And there's a few more left to premiere this spring that might get more of that attention. But it does seem like it's a really hard thing to stick the landing, even in a fairly limited series.
And as we've seen the last few years, the later you premiere, especially a limited series, the harder it is to gain enough just traction. You know, more people watch it over time when you start earlier. So this season, The Sympathizer is, I expect, HBO's big play. It's based on a great book. There's a ton of great people involved. Robert Downey Jr. is playing a bunch of characters. Sandra Oh is in it. The lead is kind of a discovery who I think could pop based on the trailer that we debuted in a first look. And I wonder about Ripley, which has had a strange journey from Showtime, which dropped it in the whole Paramount Plus rebrand to Netflix. Steve Zaillian directs the whole thing. It's a black and white adaptation with Andrew Scott. It seems like something that would hit. That one's where it's hard for me to imagine it not being a significant contender, but it definitely looks quite deliberate and moody in a way that the way we talked about, like, Maestro on the Oscar side, like, I wonder how it will play for a big Netflix audience.
I mean, it seems like at least got some genre stuff going for it that Maestro didn't. Like, we all know the Ripley story. Like, there's some mystery element to it, right?
Yep.
What about David, Gentleman in Moscow? Does it have?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned Showtime, and I think that they actually do have an exciting slate, which is nice because they don't always. And I think this year was looking especially uncertain. Yeah, they have Gentleman in Moscow, which I would say don't underestimate it. That book is so beloved, and it's a pretty solid adaptation. Ewan McGregor is great, and he won an Emmy for Halston, which was a big surprise because nobody really watched that. So he's quite well-liked by this voting body. And they also have Fellow Travelers, which I know they're going to give a push, and that was actually a pretty decent hit for them anyway. And Matt Bomer got a lot of awards attention. Jonathan Bailey won the Critics' Choice Award. So they've both had a good fall run already. So that's one that I think could still stick around if it has enough fans.
It feels like Fellow Travelers, and then maybe also to some extent Lessons in Chemistry, will be benefiting from what you're talking about there, David, where you just premiere earlier and give yourself time. And it's something that maybe the networks are learning by not throwing so much stuff out there in April and May as they have in years past. But, you know, those shows would probably get swallowed up if they were trying to compete against Shogun right now. But they had time.
Exactly.
I just want to point out that there is a significant possibility that Red, White, and Royal Blue gets nominated for Best TV Movie.
Ooh, I would love that.
Because there just aren't that many TV movies.
I mean that category.
Mr. Monk's Last Case, a Monk movie, is going to win.
Yep.
Hands down. Yeah. Although the Caine Mutiny Court Martial is actually pretty good. And
I would love for Kiefer Sutherland. That's another Showtime play. I would love for Kiefer Sutherland to get a run.
Sutherland is really good in that, kind of playing against type in a way. But yeah, I mean, there aren't a lot of TV movies, so Red, White, and Royal Blue, like, could
Red, White,
and
Royal Blue versus the Caine Mutiny Court Martial is, as we say every year,
a lot of men.
They do.
Wait, Richard, your favorite movie from TIFF, Finest Kind, with all the Boston accents you couldn't get enough of.
Oh my God, what was I thinking? How could I forget you? I'm sorry, Finest Kind.
It's there in the mix, I guess. Quiz Lady also premiered at TIFF last year and is eligible here, which I also hear is pretty good. I would like to catch up with that one.
And of course, the Melissa McCarthy masterpiece, Genie.
What is that? I'm looking at
the what?
I have no clue what you're talking
Genie,
about.
Where Melissa McCarthy plays a genie.
Of course she does.
It's a real thing. I think it was on Peacock.
The TV movie really giveth and taketh away. You never know what you're going to get. Like Fire Island, I think, won the last version of it.
Right.
The funny thing is, like, TV movie is used to be how movie actors EGOTed. You know, they did one HBO movie that aired on a Saturday night, and then they just like won random awards for it. But now TV
Julianne Moore as Sarah Palin.
I'm going to correct myself. The Weird Al movie won the TV movie Emmy, which is also pretty good. That was a
strong last year was actually a good year for TV movies. Yeah. And this year, I do think we're back in the sort of hodgepodge basket.
Yes.
Also, I did want to mention, we mentioned True Detective maybe falling off a little bit. Jodie Foster's great in that. I think Apples Never Fall kind of came and went on Peacock, but Annette Bening's great in that. And we could have a Jodie and Annette
reunion.
If Jodie, Annette, Robert Downey Jr. and Emma Stone are all nominated at the Emmys, it's going to feel so like deja vu.
Yeah,
we probably should talk about, you know, Robert Downey Jr. kind of coming in hot on The Sympathizer fresh off of his Oscar. I mean, truly, we talk about Emma Stone, like he and Emma Stone probably will both win Emmys. I don't know if I want to be that confident about it, but as you wrote about in your first look, David, he's playing like a bunch of different characters. It's a lot of performance in one show. So I would maybe promise that one at this point.
Yeah, we are embargoed, but he's doing something pretty special there, I think.
Yeah. And looking in the supporting actress for limited series, Jennifer Jason Leigh, is she the one from Fargo that we would pull out of that?
Well,
that's a hot topic right now, that name. Based on my Twitter sidebar.
I would like to see One Day also, by the way, get some consideration.
Oh my God,
here.
Yes.
Leah Woodall is so amazing.
Emeka Mode also.
She's so good. They're just like there's some good supporting performances in there. But I don't know. It's probably too
lovely and enjoyable.
I would hope. I mean, I remember Richard, you had hyped up Leah Woodall especially. I was already a fan of Mbika Mod, and I was like, okay, I'll take a look. And I watched a few, and he was great. And by the end, I was like, this is like a revelatory performance.
Yeah.
And I would hope that it would be considered in the same vein that Paul Mescal was for Normal People, mm-hmm. and he did get nominated for that. And the show hadn't. You know, wasn't exactly an Emmy darling and only got a couple nominations. I would hope something similar could happen here. But as we're talking about with actor, you know, Hiroyuki Sanada for Shogun, Tony Shalhoub, like it is quite competitive.
Yeah. But the episode where Woodall's character goes home to see his family is like some of the best acting I've seen in a long time. Like it's just really, really well done. So I would love it if that got recognized. But I don't know.
Maybe one day can get some of that early mover advantage. It premiered in February, I think. Like, it's been out for a while. So, you know, when people are tired of, like, the deep history dives of fellow travelers or whatever, they can go into something that's kind of, like, lovely and moving. I don't want to underestimate the power of that.
I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber.
Do you ever see a new face or name on your news feeds and say, who the heck is that?
Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't. The New Yorker says we spelunk deep into the demimonde with convivial delight. That's a direct quote.
Mostly, we're going to explain to you Irish star Barry Keoghan's sudden rise to fame and relationship with a not-so-under-the-radar pop princess named Sabrina.
The fake wedding Real Housewives star Cynthia Bailey had to promote a limo rental company.
And why all the Gen Zers you know are talking about a guy named Benson Boone.
Each episode goes deep into the biggest celebrity stories of the moment. And if you're still confused, we even have a weekly call-in episode where we answer the most burning celebrity queries.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. For all the things that we've talked about, and we have many months to go before the Emmys actually happen. Is there anything that you just personally are either looking forward to happening or rooting for to happen? Like, what's going to sustain your rooting interest as these months go by?
I like the strike caused randomness of some of the categories. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it'll be fun to, you know, we don't have in some top categories like expected holdover winners, you know, and so that's kind of what I'm looking forward to, is some kind of random things that, yes, might always have a slight asterisk next to their name because there's just fewer stuff to pick from. But that's what I hope, is that the Emmys, their problem is it tends to be a lot of the same winners year after year.
After like the most predictable, I would honestly say boring Emmys ever in terms of winners, and almost all of them I agreed with and liked, by the way, so it's not a criticism of the choices, but it is, I completely agree. It's very refreshing that I truly do not know what's going to happen in most of these categories. And even if I might be like, eh, at some of the winners, maybe that is better than being like, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. For 3 hours.
Yeah. I love a surprise. I'll always root for surprise. I'm gonna root for some network randomness, you know, the Abbott Elementary. I'm gonna root for Mariska Hargitay to get in there as a longtime SVU fan, just for fun. That just seems, you know, we've been in prestige for so long. Like, there's some great stuff on network as well.
And Hargitay has had like a big arc this season on SVU. Yes, I still watch every week.
Wow, but, guys, like, you should be talking about this every week. I need the SVU corner.
They're giving her like a big, like, psychological thing to play that's stretched out across episodes. So maybe that will catch attention. But I like your suggestion of Elspeth, Kara, because Carrie Preston was so good in the holdovers. And, you know, Davine obviously won everything and deserved to. But like Carrie Preston, like, also was such a good supporting performance in that movie. So if she could kind of draft off that to like work her way through a weird season and get recognition or even a win at the Emmys, that would be exciting.
Yeah, I love
that.
I don't think that's far off. I really do. I think people love her and loved that character and still do. So I think we're good with that one.
I am rooting for The Traitors.
Oh yeah,
Squid Game: The Challenge to be nominated for reality competition program to finally make that category interesting again. It is time. The Traitors was not nominated last year. Alan Cumming was not nominated last year.
Crazy.
I think that would be inexcusable this season, given what a phenomenon it was and how much people loved it and how great he is in that part. And Squid Game, even, you know, I had some problems with that show, but the production of it and just the scale of it, there is an opportunity here to actually bump out some shows that have been doing good stuff for a long time, but maybe we can reward some new things. So I am looking forward to an overhaul in that category.
I'm going to put on my snobby Anglophile hat and say, if they nominate Alan Cumming, then they should nominate Claudia Winkleman too, the original host of The Traitors from the UK version, which is available on Peacock now. People should watch the UK version.
Does that mean
it's very
Emmy
good.
Eligible?
Probably
the
not.
The UK Traitors?
But I'm going to write her in. Oh, by the way, I'm part of the TV Academy. I should
have told you. Oh, yeah. Congratulations. Yeah.
Amazing.
I'm going to crib myself from earlier and say I'm still rooting for Girls 5 Eva, but very specifically, it's never even been nominated for Outstanding Music and Lyrics, which is an Emmy category I'm overly invested in. Which is just nuts. Like, it has some of the funniest songs you can possibly imagine. So at the very least, can we get Girls 5 Eva in there this year?
That's a good call. I mean, those are like, I think sometimes songs that are meant to be funny and things aren't that funny, but those are.
I mean, I've had Step Up to Your Fort Worth stuck in my head for months now. Like, it just never leaves me. So as promised, we're going to close this episode with some news about the future of the show. And thanks to the magic of editing, we have Rebecca back here with us for this conversation, although Rebecca's still not back from maternity leave. But I'm going to share that this is my last episode of Little Gold Men, which I am really sad about. This is not my choice. Condé Nast is going through a lot of changes. I am not going to be leaving Condé especially, but I'm being moved off of work at Vanity Fair, which includes this podcast. Hosting Little Gold Men has been the joy of my life and my career for the past almost 9 years. Richard and I started the show together with Mike Hogan back in the fall of 2015. So I am really glad that it will continue on with David and Richard and also Rebecca when she is officially back from maternity leave. I will be listening. But I am sad that I don't get to continue with it. So I am glad to have the opportunity to say bye to my co-hosts, although we'll, of course, be talking, and to the listeners, because you guys have been wonderful. Your feedback has been essential. We love how this community has grown over the course of hosting this show. And I hope I continue to hear from all of you as well.
Yeah, I think this is really
such a heartbreaking piece of news. I've always viewed this podcast, no offense to Richard, as Katie's baby, and she is the one that keeps this train on the tracks. And, you know, we're a little podcast with a big heart, and that heart is Katie. So I think the rest of us are definitely struggling with this news as well.
Absolutely no offense taken, because it is the God's honest truth. I don't want to talk much because I think I'm going to cry, but yeah, it's heartbreaking, and it's so disappointing. And I have some vague hopes for the future that I will not elaborate upon here. But yeah, for now, it's very sad. And I don't really know what the podcast is going to look like or sound like, you know, going forward. But we're going to try to figure it out and do something that is never going to be as good as it is with Katie, but hopefully interesting in a different way.
Yeah, doing our best. Sharing, I'm sure, listeners, and your frustrations and sadness over a tremendous loss. So we're all just pretty stunned and heartbroken by it, to be honest.
Yeah, and as the current interloper here, I have just been so delighted to be a part of this. As sub Rebecca, I still like to call myself. yeah, Katie's the reason I got to come and play here, and it's been incredible seeing the support and love for her, and she's obviously so talented and incredible at being our wonderful queen of this realm. We are sort of, you know, this is a corporate situation, and none of us really know what to do about it. One of the things I've gotten to experience very briefly here is that you, the listeners, are so supportive and so enthusiastic about this podcast, and the reason that you are, I think, is because Katie and now how she handles this. If you would like to voice any of your support, concern, write to us at littlegoldman@vf.com. We welcome your support, your concern. We welcome suggestions to kind of power forward, to move forward through this. Again, this is, you know, a corporate situation that none of us know how to handle, aside from doing what we are doing right now and really sharing the love we have for Katie. And we're hoping that you wonderful listeners who have kept us going, just hope that you will show your support. And we, you know, I still want to feel optimistic about what could potentially happen here. And we thank you all.
Yeah, thank you guys all so much. The support from you guys, my co-hosts, and lots of other people has been really excellent in this kind of turbulent time. And I also want to say before we close this out, Kara, this is also your last episode. Very funny that our paths on this show have been different lengths, but are leaving in the same place. So before I kind of tell people where to find me, you should say farewell and tell people where else they can find you, too.
It's been such a joy. I always felt like underdog expert here because I'm not as great as these four.
Ah.
I was just going to tell you guys that. You know, you heard me. Now I'm on the internet, Kara J. Warner.
And yeah, I will be on the internet too. I will, you know, have more information about where you can find me. I guess Twitter is still probably the most likely place to find that. That Katie Rich, KateyRich, if you don't know that by now. I have an Instagram that is for public consumption at Katie Rich Talking. I can't figure out what to put on it yet, except pictures of flowers that I see when I go on walks. But maybe that's what people are looking for. I've been using Letterboxd also at Katie Rich. And I have a whole other podcast called Fighting in the War Room that I've been hosting even longer than this one, if you can believe that. So I'll be there with all of the Emmys hot takes that I won't be able to put on this show for now. I'll be listening to Little Gold Men, obviously, as David and Richard take it into the future. And who knows, you might hear me on these airwaves again. The future is unpredictable, as always. So thank you to you guys, my co-host. Thank you to Brett, our producer, who has been on this show for over 5 years now. And really, it wouldn't be the same without you, Brett, even if the listeners very rarely get to hear you. So that's it for me from now. Little Gold Men will be back, and I'll be listening right along with you.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love. Books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
What are you guys excited to cover in the next few months?
There's a new translation of the Iliad that's coming out, Emily Wilson. Really excited to see whether I can read the Iliad again, whether I'm that literate. I mean, the jury is out.
I can't wait to hear Adam Driver go again in an Italian accent in Michael Mann's Ferrari.
He can't stop.
I mean, and bless him. I can't wait.
Molto bene.
Molto bene.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You really don't want to miss this.
Don't.
Don't miss this.
Don't miss it.
See you soon.
From PRX.